Good evening, everybody. My name is Amy Tepfer, and welcome to Reading the Classics. Tonight, I brought a collection of Norwegian folktales collected by Peter Christian Osborgsen to read with you tonight. We are going to start with East of the Sun, West of the Moon. So without further ado, East of the Sun, West of the Moon. Once on a time, there was a poor peasant who had his hut full of children and not much to give them, either of food or of clothes. Pretty children they all were, but prettiest of them all was the youngest daughter. She was so lovely, there was no end to her loveliness. So it was on a Thursday night, late in the fall of the year. The sky was cloudy and it was very dark, and it rained and stormed, so the walls of the hut creaked and groaned. There, they all sat around the fire, busy with this thing and that, when, all at once, something gave three taps on the window pane. The father went out to see what it was, and when he got out, there was, what should he see, but a great white bear. "Good evening to you," said the white bear. "Good evening," said the man. "If you will give me your youngest daughter, I will make you as rich as you are now poor," said the bear. Well, the man liked the thought very much of being so rich, but he still thought he had to talk to his daughter first. So he went in and told her that there was a great white bear waiting outside who had promised to make them so rich if only he could have her. She said no and refused outright. So the man went out, and he and the white bear agreed that the bear should come again next Thursday night and get the answer. Meanwhile, they were all after the daughter and didn't give her any peace. They kept on talking and telling her of all the riches they would get and how well off she would be herself. And so at last she gave in, washed and mended her rags, made herself as pretty as she could, and was ready to set off. I can't say her packing gave her much trouble. Next Thursday night, the white bear came to fetch her. She climbed up on his back with her bundle, and off they went. When they had gone a bit of the way, the white bear said, "Are you afraid?" No, she wasn't. "Hold on tight to my shaggy coat. There is nothing to be afraid of," said the white bear. So she rode and rode a long, long way, till at last they came to a steep mountain. The white bear gave a knock on the mountain, and a gate opened, and they went into a castle. All the rooms were lit up, rooms gleaming with silver and with gold, and they came into a huge room where there was a table already laid. All was as grand could be. Then the white bear gave her a silver bell. When she wanted anything, she was only to ring it, and she would get it at once. Well, when she had eaten and the evening wore on, she grew sleepy after her journey and thought she would like to go to bed. So she rang the bell, and she had hardly touched it before she found herself in the bedroom, where there was a bed made, a bed as anybody could wish to sleep on, with silk pillows and curtains and gold fringes. All that was in the room was of gold and silver. But when she had gone to bed and put out the light, a man came in and lay down beside her. That was the white bear, who threw off his beast shape in night. But she never saw him, for he came after she put out the light, and before it dawned, he was off again. So things went on well enough for a while, but then she began to get silent and sad. All day long, she went about alone and longed to go home to see her father and mother and sisters and brothers. So one day, when the white bear asked what ailed her, she answered, "I feel so forlorn. I am so alone all day long. I long to go home and see my parents and sisters and brothers. That is why I'm so sorrowful, because I am so homesick." "Perhaps there is a way," said the white bear, "but you must promise me not to talk alone with your mother, but only when the rest are by to hear. For she will take you by the hand," he said, "and try to lead you into a room alone to talk, but that you mustn't do, or you'll make us both unhappy." So, one Sunday, the white bear came and said that now they could set off to see her father and mother. Well, off they started, she sitting on his back, and they went far and long. At last, they came to a great white house. There, her sisters and brothers were playfully running in and out of the house, and everything was so pretty, it was a joy to behold. "This is where your parents live now," said the white bear. "But mind what I have told you, else you'll make us both unhappy." "No, bless her, she wouldn't forget what he had told her." And when they reached the house, the white bear turned right about and left her. When she came in, there was such joy, there was no end to it. None of them thought they could thank her enough for all she had done for them. Now, they had everything they wished, as good could be. And they all wanted to know how she got on where she lived. She said it was very good to live where she did. She had all she wished. "What else?" she answered, "I can't say for sure, though I don't believe any of them got very much out of her." But then, in the afternoon, when they had finished their dinner, all happened as the white bear had said. The mother wanted to take her aside and talk to her alone, but she minded what the white bear had said and wouldn't by any means. "What we have to talk about, we can just as well talk about here," she said. But somehow or another, the mother got around her at last, and she had to tell her the whole story. So she told how every night when she had gone to bed, a man came and lay down beside her as soon as she put out the light, and how she never saw him because he was always up and away before the morning dawned. And that made her sad, for she thought she'd like to see him. "All day long I walk about, but there alone, and I am so very lonesome," she said. Oh dear," said the mother, "it may well be a troll you have for a husband. But now I'll tell you how to set eyes on him. I'll give you a bit of a candle, which you can carry home in your bosom. Just light that while he sleeps, but take care not to drop the tallow on him." Yes, she took the candle and hid it in her bosom, and as night drew on, the white bear came and fetched her away. When they had gone a bit of the way, the white bear asked if all hadn't happened as he had said. Well, she couldn't say it hadn't. "Now mind," he said, "if you have listened to your mother's advice, you have made us both unhappy, and all is finished between us." "Oh no," she said, she hadn't listened to her mother's advice. When she reached home and had gone to bed in the same story over again, there came a man and lay down beside her. But at dead of night, when she heard that he slept, she got up and lit the candle and let the light shine on him. And so she saw that he was the handsomest prince one ever set eyes on, and she got so fond of him that she thought she couldn't live if she didn't kiss him there and then. And so she did, but just as she kissed him, she dropped 3 hot drops of tallow on his shirt, and he woke up. "What have you done?" he cried. "Now you have made us both unhappy. Had you held out only this 1 year, you would have set me free, for I have a stepmother who has bewitched me, so I am a white bear by day and a man by night. But now all ties are snapped between us. Now I must leave you and go back to her. She lives in a castle that stands east of the sun and west of the moon. And there is a princess with a nose 3 yards long, and she is the one I must now take for wife." She wept and grieved, but there was no help for it. Go he must. Then she asked if she mustn't go with him. No, she mightn't. "Tell me the way, then, and I'll search you out, that surely I may get leave to do so," she said. Yes, that she might do, but there was no way to that place. It just lay east of the sun and west of the moon, and thither she'd never find her way. So, next morning, when she woke up, both prince and castle were gone. She lay in a little green glade in the midst of the dark, dense forest, and by her side lay a bundle of rags, which she'd brought with her from home. When she had rubbed the sleep out of her eyes and had wept till she could weep no more, she set out on her way and walked many, many days till she came to a steep mountain well. Under the mountain sat an old hag and played with a golden apple. The lassie asked her if she knew the way to the prince, who lived with his stepmother in a castle that lay east of the sun and west of the moon, and who was to wed the princess with the nose 3 yards long. "How did you come to know about him?" asked the old hag. "But maybe you are the lassie who ought to have had him." Yes, she was. "So, so, it is you, is it?" said the old hag. "Well, all I know about him is that he lives in a castle that lies east of the sun and west of the moon, and hither you'll come late or never. But I'll lend you my horse, and him you can ride to my next neighbor. Maybe she'll be able to tell you. And when you get there, just give the horse a switch under his left ear and tell him to be off home. And wait, this golden apple you may take with you," said the old hag. So the lassie got up on the horse and rode a long, long time till she came to another mountain. Under it sat another old hag winding her yarn on a golden wheel. The lassie asked her if she knew the way to the castle that lie east of the sun and west of the moon. She answered like the first hag, that she knew nothing about it except that it was east of the sun and west of the moon. "And thither you'll come, late but never, but I'll let you ride my horse to the nearest neighbor. Maybe she'll be able to tell you. And when you get there, just switch the horse under the left ear and tell him to be off home." And then she gave her the golden reel. "You might find good use for it," she said. So the lassie got on the horse and rode far, far away a weary time. And so at last she came to another huge mountain under which set an old hag spinning with the golden spinning wheel. Her, too, she asked if she knew the way to the prince and knew where the castle that was that lie east of the sun and west of the moon. But it was the same thing over again. "Maybe you are the one who ought to have had the prince," asked the hag. Yes, she was. But this old hag didn't know the way a bit better than the other two. She knew it was east of the sun and west of the moon, and that was all. "And thither you come late or never, but I'll lend you my horse, and then I think you had better ride to the east wind and ask him. Maybe he knows where it is and can blow you there. When you get to him, you need only give the horse a switch under the left ear, and he'll trot home by himself." And then she gave the lassie the golden spinning wheel. "Maybe you'll find a use for it," she said. Rode on the lassie for many days, a weary time, but at last she reached the east wind's house. And then she asked if he could tell her the way to the play east of the sun and west of the moon. Yes, the east wind had heard of the prince, and of the castle too. But he couldn't tell her the way, for he had never blown that far. "But if you wish," he said, "I'll take you to my brother, the West Wind. Maybe he knows, for he is much stronger. Sit on my back, and I'll carry you thither." Yes, she got on his back, and I should think they went briskly along. When they arrived, they entered, and the East Wind said to his brother, "Here's a lass who ought to have had the prince who lived in the castle east of the sun and west of the moon. She has set out to find him, and now she has come with me and would be glad to know if you could tell her the way to the castle." "Nay," said the West Wind, "that far I have never blown. But if you wish, I'll take her to the South Wind, for he is much stronger than either of us, and he has traveled far and wide. Maybe he can tell her. Get on my back," he told the lassie, "and I'll carry you to him." Yes, she got on his back, and so they traveled to the South Wind, and I should say they weren't a long time on the way. When they arrived, the West Wind asked the South Wind if he could tell the lassie the way to the castle that lie east of the sun and west of the moon. "It is she who ought to have had the prince there," he said. "You don't say. Is she the one?" said the South Wind. "I have surely been to many places in my time, but that far I have never blown. If you wish, I'll take you to my brother, the North Wind. He is the oldest and the strongest of the whole lot of us. If he doesn't know where it is, you'll never find anyone in the world to tell you. You can get on my back, and I'll carry you thither." Yes, she got on his back, and away they went at full speed. They weren't long on their way. When they got to the North Wind's house, he was so raging and cold that puffs came up from him a long way off. "Blast you both! What do you want?" he roared at them, and his bitter blast made them shiver. "Well," said the South Wind, "you needn't be so severe and hard on us, for here am I, your brother, the South Wind, and here is the lassie who ought to have had the prince who dwells in the castle that lies east of the sun and west of the moon. And now she wants to ask you if you ever were there, and if you can tell her the way, for she wants to find him again." "Yes, I know well enough where it is," howled the North Wind. "Once in my life I blew an aspen leaf thither, and then I was so worn out and tired I couldn't blow a puff for many days afterwards. But if you really wish to go thither, and are not afraid to come along with me, I'll take you on my back and see if I can blow you thither." "Yes," said the lassie, "with all my heart I wish to go thither with you, if it is possible in any way. And as for fear, however wildly you storm, I won't be afraid at all." "Well, well, then you had better spend the night here," said the North Wind, "for we must have a whole day before us if we are to get there at all." Early next morning, the North Wind woke her and puffed himself up and blew himself out and made himself so stout and big 'twas gruesome to look at, and off they went high through the air as if they would never stop till they got to the world's end. Down below, there was such a storm, the houses and long tracts of wood were torn up, and when the North Wind swept over a great sea, hundreds of ships went down. So they tore on and on. No one can believe how far they went, and all the while they were over the open sea, and the North Wind got more and more weary, and so, out of breath, he could scarce bring out a puff. Deeper and deeper down he drooped, till at last he sank so low that the crests of the wave washed about the lassie's heels. "Are you afraid?" said the North Wind. "No," said the lassie. But now they weren't far from land, and the North Wind had just so much strength left in him that he managed to throw her up on the shore under the window of the castle that lay east of the sun and west of the moon. But then he was so weak and worn out, he had to stay there and rest for many days before he could fly home again. The next morning the lassie sat down under the castle window and began to play with the golden apple, and the first person she saw was the long nose who was to have the prince. "What do you want for your golden apple, you lassie?" she said, and stuck her nose out the window. "It is not for sale for gold or money," answered the lassie. "If it isn't for sale for gold or money, what is it then you sell it for? Name your own price," said the princess. "Well, if I may go to the prince who lives here and stay with him overnight, you shall have it," said the lassie, whom the North Wind had brought. "Yes," said the long-nosed princess after a while, "that she might do." And so she got the golden apple. But when the lassie came up to the prince's room at night, he was fast asleep. She called him and shook him, and between times she wept. But do what she might, she couldn't wake him up, for they had given him a sleeping draught in the evening. Next morning, as soon as the day broke, came the princess with the long nose and drove her out again. So the lassie sat down under the castle windows and began to wind yarn on her golden reel. And it happened as the day before. The princess with the long nose asked what she wanted for the golden reel, and she said it wasn't for sale for gold or money, but she might get leave to go up to the prince and stay overnight with him. The princess should have it. But when she went up, she found him fast asleep again. And for all she called and all she shook and all she wept and prayed, she couldn't get life into him. And as soon as the first gray peep of day came, there came the princess with the long nose and chased her out again. Later that day, the lassie sat down outside under the castle windows and began to spin with her golden spinning wheel. And that, too, the princess with the long nose wanted to have. She threw open the window and asked the lassie what she wanted for it. The lassie said, as she had said twice before, it wasn't for sale for gold or money. But if I may go up to the prince, she said, and stay with him overnight, you may have it. Yes, that she might do, and welcome. But now, you must know that there was some Christian folk in the castle who had been carried off thither, and they sat in the room which was next to the princess. They had heard two nights in a row a girl in there weeping and crying and calling him, and they told that to the prince. That evening, when the princess came with her sleeping draught, the prince pretended to drink it, but threw it over his shoulder, for he could guess it was a sleeping potion. So when the lassie came in, she found him wide awake, and then she told him the whole story of how she had found her way to him. You have just to come in the nick of time, said the prince, for tomorrow is our wedding day, but I don't want to have a long nose for a bride, and you are the only one who can set me free. I'll say I want to see what my bride is fit for, and I'll ask her to wash the skirt which has the three spots of the shirt which has the three spots of tallow on it. She'll say yes, for she doesn't know it was you who had put the spots there. But that can be done only by Christian folk, and not by such a pack of trolls. And so I'll say that I won't have any other for my bride than the one who can do it. And you can, I know that. So there was great joy and happiness between them all that night. But the next day, when the wedding was to be, the prince said, first of all, I'd like to see what my bride is fit for. Yes, there is something to that, said the stepmother. Well, said the prince, I have a fine shirt which I'd like for my wedding shirt, but somehow or other it has three spots of tallow on it, which I must have washed out. And I have sworn never to take any other bride than the one who is able to do that. If she can't, she isn't worth having. Well, that was no great thing to do, they said. So they agreed, and the princess with the long nose began to wash away as hard as she could, but the more she rubbed and scrubbed, the bigger grew the spots. You can't wash it, said the troll hag, her mother. Come, let me try. But she had barely touched the shirt before it got far worse than before, and with all her rubbing and wringing and scrubbing, the spots grew bigger and blacker, and the blacker and uglier was the shirt. Then all the other trolls began to wash, but the more they washed, the blacker and uglier did the shirt grow, and at last it looked as black all over as if it had been dragged up the chimney. You are none of you worth a straw, said the prince. You can't even wash. Why, there outside sits a beggar lassie, and I'll be bound she knows better how to wash than the whole lot of you. Come in, lassie, he called. Well, she came in. You, lassie, he said, you can wash this shirt clean. Oh, I don't know, she said, but I'll try. And almost before she had taken it and dipped it in the water, it was white as the driven snow, even whiter. Yes, you are the one I want for my bride, said the prince. At that, the old troll hag flew into such a rage that she burst on the spot, and the princess with the long nose after her, and the whole pack of trolls after her. At last, I have never heard a word about them since. The prince and his bride then set all the poor Christian folk who had been carried off and shut up there. Then they took with them all the silver and gold they could carry and moved as far away as they could from the castle that lie east of the sun and west of the moon. The end.
The Skipper and Sir Urien. Once upon a time, there was a master mariner who had the most unheard of good fortune in all that he undertook. None had such splendid cargoes, and none earned so much money as he did, for everything seemed to come to him. And it is quite certain that there were none who could risk taking the trips he did, for wherever he sailed he had fair winds. Yes, it was even said that when he turned around his cap, the wind turned with it to suit his wish. Thus he sailed for many years with cargoes of lumber, and even went as far as China, and earned money like hay. But once he sailed the North Sea with all sails set, as though he had stolen ship and cargo. But the one who was after him sailed even more swiftly, and that was Sir Urien, the devil. With him the master mariner, as you might imagine, had made a bargain, and that very day and hour the contract expired, and the mariner had to be prepared, from moment to moment, to see him arrive to fetch him. So he came up on deck, out of the cabin, and took a look at the weather. Then he called the ship's carpenter and several others, and told them to go down at once into the ship's hold and bore two holes in the ship's bottom. Then they were to take the pumps out from their frames and set them closely over the holes, so that the water would rise quite high in the pipes. The men were surprised and thought his orders passing strange, yet they did as he told them. They bored the holes and set up the pumps closely over them, so that not even a drop of water could get at the cargo, yet the North Sea stood 7 feet high in the pumps. No more had they cast overboard their chips and litter than Sir Urien came along in a squall and grabbed the master mariner by the collar. "Wait, old boy, the matter is not so terribly urgent," said he, and began to defend himself and pry loose the claws that held him with an awl. "Did you not bind yourself in your contract always to keep my ship tight and dry?" said the master mariner. "You are a nice article. Just take a look at the pumps. The water stands 7 feet high in the pipes. Pump, devil, pump my ship dry, and then you may take me to have and to hold as long as ever you wish." The devil was fool enough and allowed himself to be hoaxed. He worked in sweat, and the perspiration ran down his cheeks in such streams that one might have run a mill with them, but he merely kept on pumping out the North Sea into the North Sea. At last he had enough of it, and when he could pump no longer, he flew home to his grandmother to rest. He let the master mariner stay master mariner as long as he might choose, and if he has not died, he is still sailing the seas at his own sweet will, and letting the wind blow according to how he turns his cap. The end.
Our final story tonight is Why the Bear is Stumpy-Tailed. One day, the bear met the fox, who came slinking along with a string of fish he had stolen. "Where did you get those?" asked the bear. "Oh, my lord Bruin, I've been out fishing and caught them," said the fox. So the bear had a mind to learn to fish too, and asked the fox to tell him how to set about it. "Oh, it is an easy craft for you," answered the fox, and soon learned. "You only have to go out on the ice and cut a hole and stick your tail down in it, and then you must keep it there as long as you can. You're not to mind if your tail smarts a little. That's when the fish bite. The longer you keep it there, the more fish you'll get. And then, all at once, out with it, with a cross pull sideways, and with a strong pull too." Yes, the bear did as the fox had said, and kept his tail in a long, long time down in the hole, till it was frozen fast in. Then he pulled it out with a cross pull, and it snapped off short. That's why Bruin goes about with a stumpy tail to this very day. The end.